Chapter 1. Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Mr. Sherlock Holmes, who was usually late in the mornings, save upon those frequent occasions when he was up all night, was seated at the breakfast table. I stood upon the hearthrug and picked up the stick which our visitor had left behind the night before. It was a fine, thick piece of wood, bulbous-headed, which is known as a Penang lawyer. Just under the head was a broad silver band nearly an inch across. To James Mortimer, M.C., see, such a stick as the old-fashioned family practitioner used to carry, dignified, solid, and reassuring. Well, Watson, what do you make of it? Holmes was sitting with his back to me, and I had given him no sign of my occupation. How did you know what I was doing? I believe you have eyes in the back of your head. I have, at least, a well-polished, silver-plated coffee pot in front of me. But tell me, Watson, what do you make of our visitor's stick? Since we have been so unfortunate as to miss him, and have no notion of his errand, this accidental souvenir becomes of importance. Let me hear you reconstruct the man by an examination of it. I think, said I, that Dr. Mortimer is a successful, elderly medical man, well esteemed, since those who know him give him this mark of their appreciation. Good. Excellent. I think the probability is in favor of his being a country practitioner who does a great deal of his visiting on foot. Why so? Because this stick, though originally a handsome one, has been so knocked about I can hardly imagine a town practitioner carrying it. The thick iron ferrule is worn down, so it is evident that he has done a great amount of walking with it. Perfectly sound. Then again, there is the Friends of the Sea. See? Guess that to be the Something Hunt, the local hunt to whose members he has possibly given some surgical assistance, which has made him a small presentation in return. Watson, you excel yourself, said Holmes, pushing back his chair and lighting a cigarette. In all the accounts which you have given of my own achievements, you have underrated your own abilities. You are a conductor of light. Some people, without possessing genius, have a remarkable power of stimulating it. I confess, I am much in your debt. His words gave me pleasure, for I had often been piqued by his indifference to my admiration, and to the attempts I made to give publicity to his methods. I was proud to think that I had mastered his system, to apply it in a way which earned his approval. He now took the stick from my hands, and examined it for a few minutes. Then, with an expression of interest, he laid down his cigarette, and carrying the cane to the window, he looked over it again, with a convex lens. Interesting, though elementary, said he as he returned to his favorite corner of the settee. There are one or two indications upon the stick. It gives us the basis for several deductions. Has anything escaped me? I trust that there is nothing I have overlooked. Most of your conclusions were erroneous. The man is certainly a country practitioner. Walks a good deal. Then I was right. To that extent. But that was all. A presentation to a doctor is more likely to come from a hospital than from a hunt, and that when the initials C. Charing Cross suggest themselves. You may be right. The probability lies in that direction. And if we take this as a working hypothesis, we have a fresh basis. Well then, supposing that C. Cross Hospital, what further inferences may we draw? Do none suggest themselves? You know my methods. The man has practiced in town before going to the country. On what occasion would it be most probable that such a presentation would be made? When would his friends unite to give him a pledge of their goodwill? Obviously, at the moment when Dr. Mortimer withdrew from the service of the hospital in order to start in practice for himself. We know there has been a presentation. We believe there has been a change from a town hospital to a country practice. It seems probable. Now, you will observe that he could not have been on the staff of the hospital. Only a man well established in a London practice could hold such a position, and such a one would not drift into the country. What was he, then? Hospital, yet not on the staff. He could have been a house surgeon or a house physician, little more than a senior student. And he left 5 years ago. The date is on the stick. Your grave, middle-aged family practitioner vanishes into thin air, my dear Watson, and there emerges a young fellow under 30, amiable, unambitious, absent-minded, and the possessor of a dog, larger than a terrier, and smaller than a mastiff. I laughed as Sherlock Holmes leaned back in his settee, and blew little wavering rings of smoke to the ceiling. As to the latter part, I have no means of checking you, but at least it is not difficult to find out a few particulars about the man's age and professional career. From my small medical shelf, I took down the medical directory and turned up the name. There were several Mortimers, but only one who could be our visitor. I read his record aloud. Mortimer. James, M. R. Devon. House surgeon, from 1882 to 1884, at Charing Cross Hospital. Winner of the Jackson Prize for Comparative Pathology, with essay entitled Is Disease a Reversion? Corresponding member of the Swedish Pathological Society. Author of Some Freaks of Atavism. Medical officer for the parishes of Grimpen, Thorsley, and High Barrow. No mention of that local Hunt Watson, said Holmes with a mischievous smile, but a country doctor, as you observed. I think that I am justified in my inferences. To the adjectives, I said, if I remember right, amiable, unambitious, and absent-minded. It is my experience that it is only an amiable man who receives testimonials, only an unambitious one who abandons a London career for the country, and only an absent-minded one who leaves his stick, and not his visiting card, after waiting an hour in your room. And the dog? Has been in the habit of carrying his stick behind his master. Being a heavy stick, the dog has held it tightly by the middle, and the marks of his teeth are plainly visible. The dog's jaw, as shown in the space between these marks, is too broad in my opinion for a terrier, and not broad enough for a mastiff. It may have been, yes, by Jove, it is a curly-haired spaniel. He had risen, and paced the room as he spoke. Now he halted in the recess of the window. There was such a ring of conviction in his voice, I glanced up in surprise. How can you possibly be sure of that? I see the dog himself on our doorstep, and there is the ring of its owner. Don't move, I beg you, Watson. He is a professional brother of yours, and your presence may be of assistance to me. Now is the dramatic moment of fate, Watson, when you hear a step up on the stair, whether for good or ill. What does Dr. James Mortimer, the man of science, ask of Sherlock Holmes, the specialist in crime? Come in. The appearance of our visitor was a surprise to me, since I had expected a typical country practitioner. He was a tall, thin man, with a long nose like a beak, which jutted out between gray eyes, set closely together, and sparkling from behind a pair of gold-rimmed glasses. His frock coat was dingy, and his trousers frayed. Though young, his long back was already bent, and he walked with a forward thrust of his head and an air of benevolence. As he entered, his eyes fell upon the stick in Holmes' hand, and he ran towards it with an exclamation of joy. I am so glad, said he. Sure whether I had left it here in the shipping office. I would not lose that stick for the world. A presentation, I see, said Holmes. Yes, sir. From Charing Cross Hospital. From one or two friends there on the occasion of my marriage. Dear, dear, that's bad, said Holmes, shaking his head. Dr. Mortimer blinked through his glasses in mild astonishment. Why was it bad? You have disarranged our deductions. Your marriage, you say? Yes, sir. I married, and so left the hospital, and with it all hopes of a consulting practice. It was necessary to make a home of my own. Come, come, we are not so far wrong after all, said Holmes. And now, Dr. James Mortimer, Mr., Sir, Mr., a humble M. R., and a man of precise mind, evidently. A dabbler in science, Mr. Holmes, a picker up of shells on the shores of the great unknown ocean. I presume that it is Mr. Sherlock Holmes whom I am addressing and not, No, this is my friend Dr. Watson. Glad to meet you, sir. I have heard your name mentioned in connection with that of your friend. You interest me much, Mr. Holmes. I had hardly expected so dolichocephalic a skull, or such well-marked supraorbital development. Would you have any objection to my running my finger along your parietal fissure? A cast of your skull, sir, until the original is available, would be an ornament to any anthropological museum. It is not my intention to be fulsome, but I confess that I covet your skull. Sherlock Holmes waved our strange visitor into a chair. You are an enthusiast in your line of thought, as I am in mine, said he. I observe from your forefinger that you make your own cigarettes. Have no hesitation in lighting one. The man drew out paper and tobacco, and twirled the one up in the other with surprising dexterity. He had long, quivering fingers as agile and restless as the antennae of an insect. Holmes was silent, but his glances showed me the interest which he took in our companion. I presume, said he, that it was not for the purpose of examining my skull that you have done me the honor to call here last night and again today? No, sir, no, though I am happy to have had the opportunity of doing that. I came to you, Mr. Holmes, because I recognized that I am myself an unpractical man, and because I am confronted with a serious problem. Recognizing as I do that you are the second highest expert in Europe, who has the honor to be the first, asked Holmes. To the man of scientific mind, the work of Monsieur Bertillon must always appeal strongly. Then had you not better consult him? I said to the scientific mind. But as a practical man of affairs, it is acknowledged that you stand alone. I trust I have not inadvertently, just a little, said Holmes. I think, Dr. Mortimer, you would do wisely if you would tell me what the problem is. The Hound of the Baskervilles,